Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Growth can be intimidating, right? More revenue means more staff and means even more work and ultimately more headaches. Plus, there seems to be no way to really predict what new problems you're going to face as you grow. Well, good news, I think there actually could be a way to look ahead and prepare for what's coming. You see, when you coach over 1,500 contractors, like Breakthrough Academy has for so many years, you notice some patterns. And it turns out the path to a highly profitable, systemized contracting business bears a lot of similarities across the board. You see, there are four phases: predictable barriers at each phase and predictable solutions that'll get you from one phase to the next. And last year, I ended up giving a keynote on this in Orlando, where we walked through the entire process. And so today, we're going to re-release it as a bonus episode to help all of you. I will say there are some graphics in the video version, so if you want to get the full experience, I recommend checking it out on YouTube. Also, to make sure you grab the resource bundle in the description. This way you can start implementing a lot of these solutions right away. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy this episode. Let's get started. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. So I've been given 45 minutes to talk to you about how to grow every stage of your organization from zero to $10 million and beyond. There's a lot. There's going to be a lot I'm going to go through. My hope is that each one of you take away just one nugget from this. I know you've probably met with vendors, been through some speaking things, been to breakout rooms. There's probably a lot over the next few days that you can, have in your notes section. I would just say for me, pick one thing, and we'll talk about that as we go. So this whole talk was designed around understanding what are like the growth phases that we all go through in business. And the truth is, it's more predictable than you think, right? Especially in the roofing industry. I work in roofing, landscaping, painting, renovations. I see the same pattern time and time again, and I see the same people, generally entrepreneurs, hitting these very similar barriers that for them it's the first time they've ever hit it. So my hope today is I'll give you one nugget per kind of growth phase that you can take with you depending on where you're at in business and use it to actually implement in your business pretty much immediately. So everything we talk about, we're also going to give a download or a resource on. So there'll be things from like org structure examples and budgeting sheets and job description examples and anyways, all kinds of different things. So every topic I touch on today, I'll touch on it relatively lightly, but just know that you'll be given like a download package to actually implement it kind of leaving today. So there'll be a little QR code like everybody does. So a bit about me. So like I said, my name is Danny Kerr. I'm one of the co-founders and the visionary behind this thing called Breakthrough Academy. You guys ever heard of this thing before? It's essentially like an incubator for contractors to systemize their business for growth. So most of our customers sit between like the $1 and $20 million kind of phase of business, which is a lot of us. And we've been working for about 10 years on like, I think it's about 2,000 businesses now that we've actually systemized. And so you see these patterns, right? But it was interesting for me to even be up here talking and doing the work that I do, because I don't think if you'd met me when I was a young kid holding that chicken, you'd ever seen my destiny heading in this path. Because I, too, am an entrepreneur, right? I've been an entrepreneur. My first business I ever started when I was 18 years old. And it was out of desperation more than inspiration. I came from, and some of you maybe have a similar background, but I came from complete poverty, right? We lived off $800 a month. My mom was a single mom raising us on welfare. My dad was a drug addict. He eventually passed away from his heroin addiction when I was about 14. And I remember the fear of God in me at that age. When most people are just worried about getting good grades, getting a girlfriend, I was kind of like, how am I going to survive and not become my dad? And I found entrepreneurship as my path to that. I didn't really have the skill. Like, I didn't really know what it took to be an entrepreneur. I didn't even have like a mentor or an example. I just had like, whatever, piss and vinegar. Like, I was just ready to go, right? And that's how I progressed through my first stage of, like, let's call it, like, 18 to 25-year-old life. So I started this little painting company with a company called College Pro Painters. They taught me all these little things. I worked a lot of 80-hour work weeks. I had bags down to here all the time. But I built something. You know, by the time I was about 25, I'd have about 100 staff underneath me. I built something pretty significant, actually. I was one of the top franchisees in the country. And a lot of people would look to me and they gave me little awards and it's like, wow, Danny, like you really pulled something off. And yet I felt pretty hollow inside because all I was an entrepreneur at that point. I had run so far away from this chaotic past I had. I had no idea even who I was anymore. I was just the guy who got results. You give me a goal, I'll hit it, right? And I had this motto. I remember my ego was tied to it pretty much. I was like, I may not be able to outsmart you, but you better believe I will outwork you. And that got me in a bit of a pickle, because that family wouldn't have happened if I just kept that motto going. My wife's at the back, but she's been with me since I was 16 years old, and she watched me go through this transformation. And at first she was proud, and then she was really worried, right? She was like, all you are is a like workaholic entrepreneur. This is not success. And people might think you're successful, but you're not. And so I had to go through another big transformation. I had to dive deep into myself and understand that, like, just because you're passionate and you have lots of ideas and you're good at problem solving and people will buy from you doesn't mean you're going to be successful, because I'm going to be an entrepreneur likely for the rest of my life. I need to figure out the other side of the coin, which is I need to, like, understand my financial statements. I need to build an org structure for my staff. I need to have proper job descriptions and standard operating procedures, all the boring stuff that I, like, avoided while I was having fun building this thing, right? But it was my only way out. And so I did that, and we continued to grow the business. I actually continued to actually work into corporate with College Pro and ended up taking over Western Canada as like the head of development for all the franchisees. So I not only got a cool opportunity to kind of transition up in my organization, I also like saw patterns. I got to see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of small businesses every single year go through very similar things. And when I decided to finally leave this really cool place that like brought me up as an entrepreneur, I realized like the only thing I really want to do is take all those patterns that I've been recognizing, because that's one thing I'm pretty good at, and apply it to something more than myself, which was basically Breakthrough Academy. So for the last 10 years, we've been on this mission to like transform hardworking, honest human beings, or just giving her shit, right? And just turn them into more thriving entrepreneurs. And what most of us are missing are systems. Like, we're missing that side of who we are. It's not ingrained, and it's not usually what's required when we first start a business, right? It's that grit that gets things moving. The other thing I noticed is I worked with a lot of universities when I was recruiting these young franchisees, and I noticed that like school was teaching people in a very linear path how to go get a job, right? And I noticed that most people, most of my peers actually, had this very linear path laid out for them where they just do their job and do what they're told, and eventually they'll get the paycheck they need to get, and things are kind of worked out for them. Whereas I had chosen this really random thing called Become an Entrepreneur, which had no path. And it made me go and do tailspins all the time, and people thought I was nuts, and my mom thought I was crazy. And anyway, it worked out. But thank God I had something like College Pro leading the way. I had a franchise organization that I was a part of, and I was able to see the systems that we had created to help these franchisees and myself. And I thought, man, that's what I want to go do. So we'll get into it a bit today on Breakthrough Academy, but like essentially we created a franchise system without the franchise. And the reason I think it works so well, and the reason I think we've worked with so many people over the years, is because I think all of you guys have entrepreneur ADD. Me too, right? And whether you're physically diagnosed with ADD, or you just feel that way running your business, it can also just stand for another darn distraction, right? I mean, I went and walked through the trade show today, and I was like, holy cow, like there's so many even new vendors here. Like, I don't even know who does marketing, who does sales, who does coaching, who does CRM, like, which one do you pick, right? And that's part of the problem, is we're supposed to navigate this world, and there's no real direction to do it. And we're trying to move, often, most of us in this room, are trying to move from this like grassroots level entrepreneur where, kind of like I described, there's a ton of hustle going on, right? Get pretty quick results pretty fast from that manual effort. Most of us are pretty good problem solvers. Like, we kind of see and know what we need. So we can just go do that and run the business a bit from our hip. It's pretty exciting, but it's pretty stressful. And we're trying to move from this like more grassroots person to an enterprise person or enterprise business, right? Where there's controlled effort, predictable results. We're kind of out of the day-to-day. We've got good financial controls, good implemented systems to help our staff run, and it's just way more predictable. But how do you get there? Because everyone and their dog is telling you that they've got the solution, but it's just a piece to the bigger puzzle, isn't it? Every little thing. And which ones are the right things? And we do have to change our mentality around this, because fundamentally, you guys have all seen this quote before, right? What got you here will no longer get you there. The reason that rings so true, and you can't just continue manually making things happen all through your hours and your effort, is because you cannot outwork an unsystemized business. I've tried. Trust me. It doesn't work. You just end up crying. So I thought I'd do a cool thing today just to illustrate this concept. So everybody grab your phones for a second, and I want you to get your calculator out, and I want you to calculate the number of people that you lead right now. So that includes subcontractors as well. It's totally fine. How many people in your organization right now are you leading? Now, times that number of people by 35 hours in a week. And I'd love to say 40, but the truth is, through rain days and sick days and productivity issues, it's never 40. It's 35, trust me. The average is 35. So how many people times 35 hours in a week? What do you get? What do you get? Give me some numbers. Say it louder. 525. What else? It's like Price is Right. What else you got? 140. What was it? Say again. 526. So we're in the 500, 100 kind of range, right? That's in 1 week. Now times that by whatever you want, 52 weeks of the year, 48 weeks of the year. That's how many hours you command. And when you think about how many things do you do in a week that are just doing someone's job or doing one of your things, which is a job, which should maybe be replaced at some point by a system or a person or a better way to do things. Every hour that you're spending doing something versus leading or building something is often an hour wasted as the company grows. Now, there is no on-off switch to this. This isn't like an overnight, like, I'll just stop doing everything then, fine, Danny told me to. Like, that'll also lead to bad things. But there is a transitionary phase through all this where you do need to slowly know how and when to let go and what to replace it with as you grow. Does this make sense? It's an interesting number to look at, eh? There's a good gap. So, without getting into tons of the details today, I mean, this is essentially what we do. And we work with usually people for a couple years, right? We call it the contractor growth method, but what it essentially is it's a machine where we're connecting the financials into the organizational structure, connecting the org structure into the job descriptions, connecting the job descriptions into the recruiting process, helping us understand who we're looking for, what the interview questions even are, connecting all of that into the onboarding process and the scenario operating procedures for the company, and rolling all of that in to a strategic plan for the organization. So there's a path to follow. There's a machine that replaces the owner with a system, slowly, over time. Now that's a lot, and to actually build that into a company properly takes time. And this is kind of what today's talk is about, right? Like, there are phases to growth that matter, and there are things that you should be aware of at each phase to make sure you're putting the right amount of time, money, and effort, and energy into some of these things. This talk honestly could last 5 days, but I started to pick like one key system or one key idea per growth phase that I think would really be helpful, which is hopefully for most of us out today, it's like it's something that maybe you haven't considered, or if you have considered it, it probably needs to be brushed up and dusted off and relooked at. So these are the phases. There's your operator phase, right? This is the person who's just kind of like just getting rolling, has a few staff, nothing crazy. They are doing a lot of the manual effort, and to be honest, it's totally good to do that. You need to go learn your business. Oh, there is one or two things I'm going to tell you to do. There's the manager phase, when you start putting in key staff, production manager, maybe a sales manager, maybe an office admin, and you're putting some people between you and the day-to-day, but you're still working with the business and them actually quite a bit. Then there's the leadership phase, where you're actually building that team up to be completely autonomous, where they're taking over the day-to-day to the point where the phone doesn't ring on your end anymore. And then finally, there's the strategy phase, where the business is an entity of itself. You can scale it, you can duplicate it, you can do what you would like, but you as a strategist better understand how to take that company in a very clear, straight direction. Otherwise, the thing falls apart. To give you rough revenue ranges, now this is not an exact science, but in roofing, I see it's like 0 to 1 million in that first stage, 1 to 5 in that second stage, 5 to 10 in that third, 10 to 30, 10 to 20 in the fourth. You guys all see yourself in one of these four stages right now? Hands up if you know kind of where you sit in this. Let me just ask the room, how many of you are like, we're definitely in operator phase right now? It's very just like us running the business. It's like super manual. Cool. Who's in manager phase right now? We've got a bit of a team. We're growing them. They're starting to take on tasks from us. It's not fully done. Who's in leader phase? We've got a pretty good team, and they're starting to really take it off my plate, and I'm starting to feel a little bit useless, a little bit strange. And who's in strategist phase, which is like, the thing is built. I need to know now how to capitalize and build the crap out of it across the country or whatever it is. Cool, a couple of you. So how do you master these phases? Let's go through one by one at a time. And I'll say this, as I go through these systems, just because maybe it's a system that's not within your category, try not to ignore it if it's not something you do. You might want to give it a thought. So operator phase, 0 to 1 million. Usually, like I said, they're involved in every role. They have minimal data or tracking systems, usually just managing a few employees and subs, right? The biggest barrier that I see is actually job costing. And a lot of people, and even when I was building this, I was like, it's probably sales and marketing, but I actually am not going to say it because I think enough people talk about it. The ability for a small business to profitably estimate, book, and produce work is the ability for that business to exist in the marketplace. If you can't figure that model out early on, you should not scale and grow that business. More revenue is not going to equal more success. You're going to be building a broken machine. You're going to be driving a car with flat tires. It's going to get painful. Trust me, when you start adding overhead, it's going to crush you. Actually, one of the biggest things I see is people don't know their true profitability per job because they're also doing a bunch of the work on the job and not billing their hours and don't realize as soon as you pull yourself off, that job's not profitable. Not for the overhead you're about to incur, right? And when I talk to contractors, and I talk to a lot of them, it's roughly 20% that actually do this, at this stage in business anyways, right? There's 80% that aren't doing this. So we're going to give everyone a tool today that's going to help you do it. It's simple. It's an Excel file, but it's very powerful, I think, because it's so simple. It helps you track job by job how much profit's being made. It helps you break out labor, subs, material, and other. And you can start to see the average costs and spends that are going into the project and seeing what actually spits out on the other side. You can also separate all your jobs by job type. So should you do commercial, service, residential, you can see what type of projects are making you the most amount of money and which ones are costing you. Because there's also this romantic feeling of like, I just love doing this. And then you look at the numbers and you're like, we're making 22% gross on this. And the other ones are making 42. Something needs to change, right? And it forces action. You might be changing your estimating process. You might be changing the people producing the work and your subcontractor team. Whatever it is, you're going to see the loss in the numbers. And I'll tell you, it's not always just about these big percentages. It's often just about 1%. Right? What's 1% on $1 million? What is it? Do the math. What is it? $10,000. How many of you see at least 1% being lost on projects between them being estimated and produced, and there's just wastage happening? How many see that? How many agree it's probably a lot higher than that? Probably more like 5%. It's kind of the average I see for most people, right? So for a small business at $1 million, able to recoup 5% of their job costs due to better estimating or just pinpointing where the issues are, that's $50,000 for that small business. That's an entire administrative salary for a whole year, right? Suddenly the idea of tracking this stuff doesn't seem so painful when you realize I could track it for long enough to afford this salary and then replace it so someone else can do this and many other things, right? And suddenly you can incur overhead and grow the organization because value is being derived. Does this make sense? So for those of you who have mastered this tool, great, give it to your reps. Let them start to get an idea of what's really going on. The more optics and clarity that I think the people on your team have of where value is being created, I think it's easier for them to focus on the right things. Which gets me into my next point. I'll get into a sec. So anyway, we're going to give you an example file. It'll be a cool walkthrough. There's a whole tool that's built off of it. It's like an instruction manual and shows you how to use it. So what do you do with this? Well, you start to probably transition a little bit more into manager phase, where you can now afford to hire and train and develop people that are on the overhead side of the company, right? And so for these managers, you're probably lacking a full detailed financial picture. You might have figured out how to make money on the job site, but what about the company's budget? Do you have an annualized budget every year that you make up that you check every single month versus goal, right? You're probably wearing a few too many hats. As much as you might be have delegated out a production manager and a sales manager and but I still do the commercial quotes myself. Or I still do, you know, it's like you still hold on to stuff and you take on a little bit of everybody's job. And ultimately, because you are the source of truth, you're the bottleneck. All things still need to go through you. You know this feeling? It's kind of like you're just juggling and you're just like, whatever's the loudest ringing bell is the thing I'll take care of today. And you're growing and people are producing for you, but you have no idea what's really going on behind the curtain, right? And so this is a broad statement, but at this stage, you are very much lacking the systems, right? The things that require you to step away from that entrepreneurial zest and actually build process in the organization. And the thing I always laugh about when I say the word systems is it could literally mean anything, right? Every booth here could say that they help build systems. So I thought I'd be a bit more specific and show you kind of what I mean. Build a good KPI dashboard, something that tells you goal versus actual within the organization on all key numbers that matter. And I'll go through some of those in a bit. Build a reporting structure where everybody knows the numbers that they are in charge of, and they can go after those numbers. And by hitting those numbers, they can deliver an ROI to the company. Build role-specific agreements where every role in the organization knows what their job is versus the next person, and it's all based on the workflow of the company. So they're doing like our Henry Ford production line of passing the ball forward, and they know where their job starts and ends and where the next person goes, right? And then build an accountability structure around this, where you're setting goals with your team, where they're held accountable to hitting these targets, and they know by doing their job, hitting these numbers, they can achieve what they need to for the organization, and you're there to coach and develop them. Right? What does this look like? Well, I hope by now most of us have QuickBooks and maybe a project management software. And if we're here shopping for one, JobNimbus anyways is my preferred one that I've referred for a lot of years. And these systems are great. And they kind of tell you as an entrepreneur kind of where you're at for the first time. And I think for most owners or most managers looking at these types of systems who start to take time to understand them, it feels good. You're kind of like, I can see the numbers of the company finally. Like I see the patterns of what's going on. But here's one interesting thing I've noticed with every single system I've ever worked with. We work across landscaping, painting, all these other trades. There's almost no project management software that'll help you set up the goal against the actual, unless you're doing custom development in like Salesforce or something like that, right? So we built this as well. We'll give you a free template for it today as well. But it's something that allows you to put up, you know, sales goals, production goals, financial goals, sales ratio goals, so like closing ratio, lead slippage, average job size, productivity per hour, things that'll help you see, okay, this is where we're at, and then right next to it, it shows you this is where you're supposed to be. And that gap is what creates real value. Because now all you're doing is seeing where the gap is and starting to work on closing it, right? But if all you know is where you're at versus where you're supposed to be, it's hard to gauge if that's good or bad, right? Is $10,000 a week produced per crew good or bad? I don't really know. Is closing ratio of 52% good or bad? I don't really know. It depends on the averages in the organization and the goals you've set up to get there, the financial plan. Now, when you've done a good job of that, the next stage is to bring these goals down to your people. So how many of you have built this before, an organizational structure, like a chart that shows this to the team, to yourself? Okay. So this is good, and I think a lot of people build these, and they usually build it by like who does what in the organization. Here's a twist on this. Build one that shows who delivers on what in the organization. So if the sales manager needs to deliver on $3.2 million of booked work, keep the sales average sales ratio at 55% and maintain a gross profit margin of 35% on the projects that they estimate with their team, and that's that one person's job, we can start to deduce how many sales reps that person needs and what their goals should be below them. And that allows that sales manager to have one target to go after, and guess how they're going to achieve it? Not by doing it all themselves either. They're going to start to be able to delegate down to each sales manager or each sales rep, here is your goal and here's your target to achieve. And if you all achieve your piece, I'm going to achieve my goal and we'll hit what we need to for our arm of the organization. And if you back up, we've got the same thing for office admin, we've got the same thing for production. And everybody has in their job a deliverable, a number that they have complete control and autonomy over based on where they're at in the organization. So it's numbers that make sense for them. They have control over it. And if a hit and achieved, they get to deliver an ROI to the company. And hopefully that also means they get a bit of a bonus and they get a kickback, but they know where and how they're delivering value. And not just saying, I need more money. I mean, inflation. It's like, yeah, I get it. We're all dealing with it right now. How do you deliver more value so I can pay you more? Here's the numbers. Let's go. Does this make sense? So manager phase. A couple more steps on this. Oh, there we go. Build those numbers into the employment agreements. So make them real. Make them official. Again, I'm going to give you guys like a 15-page employment agreement example and template. But right at the top on the first page, it talks through deliverables. Here are the numbers you need to achieve. In order to achieve these numbers, here's the responsibilities that you have in the role. If you do these responsibilities, here's the numbers you need to report on and when you need to report on them, and sorry, what you need to report on and who you report to. And finally, here's the bonus structure and compensation package that relates to these deliverables. Everything's tied, that entire role is tied to those numbers. Right? And the final thing is the responsibility of the owner or the manager overseeing the team, is you need to actually coach your people. Right? You should be moving. At this point in business, you should be feeling like you're shifting from everybody's boss to everybody's coach. And if you're not feeling that, and you're still feeling like you're micromanaging and babysitting people, chances are you haven't done this quite right. So we do a structure called GSNR, stands for Goal Setting and Review. It's a weekly, biweekly, or monthly rhythm. You can pick which one you want to go after with your team. But it helps keep a pulse on what's really happening, reflect on the past results for the last couple weeks or last week, move forward and look at what's the goal for the next week, make sure it's a part of the actual plan for the year, so we break all the goals down to weekly or biweekly or monthly, and make sure that actually like, they're scheduled in their like time to do things that will actually achieve that goal. My goal next week is to do 14 estimates. Cool, you've got room for 10. We might need to look at that goal, right? So you're there to coach them. Help coach your team to get through to their year-end goals so that ultimately everybody's going to win. And the responsibility is up to them to go hit the number, not you. Right? I remember this. It was like I had to like mentally handcuff myself to being like, I will not book more work. I will not produce more work. I will not manage more jobs. I have to do this through my team. And the only way I'm allowed to hit the goal this year is through my team. Because it's so easy just to reach in and fix the problem. Right? But they're not learning what they truly need to learn, and you're not building a company that's truly scalable. Make sense? So this is kind of manager phase. We do a lot of work in this phase with a lot of members. So, what do we do with this? What do we do with this? We start to build a team. The team starts to get more mature. People start to take on their roles a little better. And you get to this leader phase. You're kind of 5 to 10 million now. And this is, again, the numbers, disregard them a little bit because it can be different things to different people. But essentially what's going on is you're lacking really strong leaders. You've actually created, I often call it like you've created a management team, which is great, but you don't have a leadership team. And there is a difference. A management team still is afraid to make the final decision, still doesn't quite have the confidence to take things fully off your plate, or you don't have the confidence in them. So you're still checking in on stuff and you're probably micromanaging in some places you probably shouldn't, right? And part of the problem also is that you're holding all the information in your head. And people don't really like want to make the call without you being involved. Right? So here's the biggest thing that I've figured out when it comes to this stuff. And there's a lot of like leadership training. I don't think this is the only thing, right? But this is the one that I really stuck with, which is understanding my leadership development through situational leadership. Who's seen this before? This is like, you could Google this and find this chart. Who's seen this before? So this is the concept that you as a leader need to approach your people's skills with different styles of leadership as they grow and develop and evolve over time. Now the funny thing is, all of you as humans have a preferred style of leadership that you both like to be led by and often will lead others through because that's how you learn best. But that's not necessarily true for all people, and not necessarily true for all people at all stages in business. So we've got the high direction phase, right? Which a lot of us will go do with a new employee, right? You raise them up, you say, I'm gonna show you everything. Follow me around, I'm gonna like basically like micromanage the crap out of you so that you know exactly how we do everything in the business. You've got the coaching phase, which is, hey, now I'm gonna let you know why we do all these things exactly the way that we do them so that you can actually think for yourself a little bit more and have some critical thinking around the tasks that are in front of you because they're not always textbook. Then we've got the supportive phase, which is, hey, you probably know the answer, but you're so used to me giving you the answer, I need to like challenge you and be more of your sounding board than the person who's gonna give you all the answers all the time. And then finally, you've got the delegating phase, which is, you got this. And you know you got this. We're good. I can take my mind off of it, finally. Now, the problem with most of us is we're so busy, in our best leadership years, we'll go high direction with people to make sure they know exactly what to do, and then we go to delegation. We're like, see ya, I gotta go. You got it, right? And they're like, yeah, I got it. But they don't, and they fail. And it affects their confidence. Or you don't know when to let go. And you keep just like micromanaging people to the nth degree. And then they lose their confidence, and they don't know how to get it back. And then they become like, what's the word? It's basically like they turn their brains off. And you're just like, are these people like stupid, lazy, or unmotivated? Like, what's going on? They just keep coming back to me. It's because you spent too much time in high direction trying to support them, but you took away their confidence to think for themselves, right? So let's use this in a hypothetical example, one that I see all the time. Let's say you're promoting your top sales rep to now be sales manager. Who's done this before? Okay, a couple of you in the back here. Now, what that top sales rep probably knows extremely well is how to sell a project, how to estimate a project, how to bring it in through to production, right? They can do that in their sleep. And you might, because of that, assume that they can do everything else new that you're about to give them in their sleep. But they probably don't know how to do goal setting review meetings. They probably don't know how to read and monitor the CRM for the financial data to be able to pull out what's, you know, trends and patterns. They probably don't know how to, you know, maybe prioritize their time super effectively because they've always had you helping them with it. Whatever it is, they probably are really terrible at some stuff, and they're probably really good at some other stuff. And you as their leader need to decipher what style of leadership do I need to apply to this person's skill, because they have different skills. So I can't be all directive with them, and I can't be all delegation, and I can't be all support. I need to be a different type of leader for the different skills that this person is learning over their course and period of development. That's a very conscious thing to do, right? So I'm going to be high direction with you when it comes to doing GSNRs, and I'm going to do goal setting review meetings with you and your team for the next 3 months to make sure you get this. But when it comes to like going and doing a field meeting and like teaching someone how to close a job or get needs or handle objections, like, dude, you got this. Take it. And apply the right type of leadership to the appropriate skill level of that specific part of a person, not a person as a whole. That kind of makes sense. Thoughts on this? This is what creates autonomy, right? Because you're giving people freedom and you're doing it in a very systematic way, and they feel honored. They go like, hey, I feel supported, but not too much and not too little, and you're taking the time to grow them. The number one issue that most people have with this is, theoretically, this is great, but like, who has time for this? What I can tell you is it takes years sometimes. See, I don't know if you know Breakthrough Academy. There's a guy who runs something called Contractor Evolution named Benji Carlson. He's unbelievable. And I took 4.5 years building him up into the person he is today, to the point where he's doing things I could never do. He's far better than me at running the podcast we have and creating the content that we have. And I'm like, dude, rock and roll. But I took a lot of time building that human. And for me, I was like, I don't know any other way. And to be honest, I don't want to keep replacing this role and retraining this role over and over again. So when I found a good person, I invested, right? So we're not done yet. What do you do with all of this? Well, you get to this strategist phase where the business is running pretty well, right? You probably have well-run leaders in each department. They're kind of managing the day-to-day for you. Your phone stopped ringing, finally. You're only involved at like the high level, so like the strategic vision of the company, and you can kind of step out of the day-to-day. In fact, if you took a month or two off, you actually would be fine. The company would keep spitting out profit. And hopefully, and usually, making decent money, 10 to 20% net on a large-scale organization. That's a great place to be. That's like the dream for so many people. And yet I see people get here, and I see it fall apart like sand between their fingers. Why do you guys think that is? Why do you think that is? They're lacking vision. Because you want to retire, because you spent too many years trying to get there, and now you feel like you hit the oasis, and you're like, I'm done. And the company crumbles. Because people don't have anything more to work for now than just their paycheck. And unfortunately, you've created a team of people that have, over time, will have a transactional relationship with you, right? This is also when HR starts to kick in and all these other little new issues come. Now, one of the best things I could tell you at this stage is to be very clear, your job finally, after like, since the beginning, you wanted to be that visionary leader, and you had to go do all this work that I just told you to go do, you can actually finally go do that job that you wanted to do when you first started this business, which is cast the vision, bring the passion, apply the heart back into the organization. So here's some tools to help you with it. First idea is a painted picture. Has you guys ever heard of a painted picture before? It's kind of is what it sounds like. It's a picture that you as the entrepreneur get to paint about the future of the organization you run. So we did this. We did this about 5 years ago, and we just hit it, actually. It was our 2024 painted picture. It's called BTA 500. 500 members actively coached. We had a whole thing around how we're building all the systems and have a completely like done-for-you process for all the major industries we serve. And it's done. We hit 630 members. It was amazing. I'm now spending this year building the next one. And trust me, this year has been a hard year for us because I don't have the vision dialed for the team to review. And that we're starting to see people drift off into different like things that they think are important for the future. So having this kind of anchors everybody in the organization. All the things that they work on, no matter how autonomous they are, they have to decide what's actually important. And when you can write this thing, and I'll describe what it is, it's basically like a 5 to 15 page document that is essentially kind of like a speech that you would read 3 to 5 years from now at your big company retreat. And it's filled with the brand voice, the marketing tactics, the sales process, the look and feel of the organization, the culture of the people, the way this company shows up in the community that it serves. It's the picture. It's the thing that for most of us as entrepreneurs have in our minds, but we struggle so much to actually get out and like put down in front of our team. I'm spending the better part of a year building this thing. I've written it, I've rewritten it, I had ChatGPT use it, I don't really like what it wrote, so I'm rewriting it again. It's just like, it's been a thing of a beast. But I want to get it right, because we were able to read this year to our team, and it was scary how accurate it was, because we were all working together on this one big idea. And I got to write it again, and I better be ready to implement when we start, right? So we're going to give you an exercise on this, which is, I think, even if you're at the beginning of business, this is still a very powerful thing to do. Having this level of understanding and direction, and you may not get it perfect, I think it helps articulate the vision, right? And the next big thing that backs this up is the strategic plan. And I still also, I will say this tool too, I recommend all businesses do this at all stages. And there's two reasons. One, I think you'll require it to stay focused to build all the stuff I just talked about. But two, I think it's good practice so that when you get to this place in business, you're a pro at it. And what is this? This is taking the big 5-year vision, the painted picture, and breaking it down into an annual goal, so numbers and initiatives. What are the actual metrics we want to hit in production, sales, revenue, profit, quality ratings? What are all the numbers? Strategically thinking through them in a smart way, so they're specific, measurable, attainable, relevant to where actually going, and time-phased. And then being able to say, okay, if we want to hit these targets, we need to implement these systems and hire these people and finish these initiatives. What are we doing this quarter? And then breaking these things down into their quarterly segments. What are the numbers for this quarter? What are the quarterly initiatives we want to go achieve? Whatever it is. And then having reviews on this quarterly. And realizing as an organization that the goal never changes, but the path to get there often does. And so everyone's trying to achieve it, but the way that you originally wrote it out might change. That's totally fine, but the goal's there for you guys every quarter to problem solve and shift and dodge and weave and let the economy do what it's going to do. Let that project manager that ran the show quit. Let things happen, but know that you're going to be able to adjust because you've got a target for the entire organization to go after. Everybody gets to partake in this. So this tool, again, give away for free. It's a good walkthrough tool. It helps you build a strategic plan on one page, and it, again, walks you through step by step. All these tools are really neat. They're kind of built with almost like IKEA furniture, like step by step directions. And they've got an example file and a template. So you can take this stuff and use it in your office and take some instruction on how to do it. So this is just a neat testimonial. So Gabriel, who's been with us since 2019, I actually think I met him here years ago. His first big painted picture, his first big idea was to go from basically 3 million to 20 million a year. And he hit that. Now he's got a new one he's going after. He'll go for 50. Like, all the stuff I'm talking about isn't just cool things on an Excel sheet or a piece of paper. This is real stuff. This happens every day. It's actually hard for me to even internalize it sometimes when I realize I'm like, we have hundreds of businesses that are doing this right now. It's because of this random idea I had in my basement 10 years ago. But it's happening. And it's these little steps, these little pieces every step of the way that are actually being implemented, and real businesses are growing out of them. It's come out of just this random thing I used to do with college pro painters as a kid to go survive. But do you see the connected pieces, right? Where you're starting out with the numbers. You're like, I need to make sure I'm profitable in every job. I need to start to understand the numbers of the company. I can then use those numbers, actually define the roles I'm hiring for next and afford them, but make sure everybody has a target they need to go achieve. I'm then taking those people that I'm giving those targets to, and I'm working with them, and I'm investing in them, because they're the future of who's going to run this company. And then I'm finally able to step back and set the strategic direction for the company and actually lead like a visionary leader should. But the path isn't linear. You'll take lefts, rights, and turns, and all kinds of things will go wrong. But I do believe an entrepreneur who starts this business is meant to drive it all the way through. You just got to put up with a little bit of your own inequities and BS a little bit along the way, because it does require you to have a bit of more of a strategic focus, not just all dreamer all the time. It's kind of like the heart and head playing at their best, right? And combining to one another. This doesn't have to be just you either. Like, I've got two other business partners. One of them is an absolute genius. He's like an Einstein. And he's like very rigorous and very like process oriented and very just like he kind of walks like this, right? But I love him, but he's my exact opposite. And we play to each other's strengths. And together we've been building our organization through this exact stuff I'm showing you actually. But we're utilizing each other to get through all these growth phases ourselves. Now, we talked a lot about structure and systems and processes, and he said, you have an extra 5 minutes, do you want to talk about something? So I thought I'd throw one more thing in just as a bonus. While you go down these phases of growth, there is a very real emotional component that takes you in and out of the game constantly. So you guys know, like, I'm sure you all feel this, like being an owner of a business is likely one of the most stressful things you have ever done in your life. It's taking you to the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, right? Not having enough money to pay for payroll next week, getting yourselves in $1 million worth of debt, having a project. I've burnt down a house before. That was interesting. Stuff happens. And you have this idea and this dream, and there's some that will make it and some that will quit along the way. And I'll tell you, it was interesting for me being a franchisor for a while where I was teaching people how to run their own small businesses because I was also interviewing them and helping them get assigned a TERF. And so when I was interviewing them, I was looking at different traits. And the number one trait that I realized defined success for my franchisees was fundamental, is their ability to handle stress in pursuit of a goal. And the reason why most of you are even in this room and not just working for someone else potentially is because you went through this already a few times. And you, guess what? You're going to continue to go through it as you push for growth. But this is what happens, right? So we all start in this place called uninformed optimism. You know you're here because you're really stoked about this new idea or a new person or new type of project or new growth trajectory for the company, but you have no real clue about any of the details about how it's going to work. But you're stoked, right? Whatever that thing is to you. We're going to onboard Job Nimbus. It's going to be amazing. We're going to finally bring in this masterful project manager. I've been courting him for 2 years. We're going to finally get into commercial work. We're going to get into service work. We're going to blow it up. We're going to open up into a new territory. What could possibly go wrong? Right? And then you get into it. And then reality sets in. And then that project manager quits on you. And then Job Nimbus, nobody wants to use it because they don't understand it. And then that new line of projects you were doing are massively unprofitable. Right? And you hit this place called informed pessimism. You have a more realistic understanding of what's going on, but you're pretty pessimistic about it, right? You're either beating yourself up, I'm not good enough, I'm in over my head, I can't believe I did this, this is all on me. Or if you're externalizing, you're externalizing. It's not me, it's the market, it's the millennials, it's the Gen Zers, it's the technology. But you're not problem solving anything, you're just wallowing in your own self-pity. And so that continues to take you down an even darker path. And you get to this place called crisis of meaning. And you know you're here because when you're driving from job site to job site or you're sitting in the office throughout the day, time ticks by and you have no idea where you're going or what you're doing. You're lost. You're numb. How many of you have been here in your life? We all have. I think most of us have. And what's interesting about this time is you're high in emotion, low in intelligence. It's actually not a time to make a ton of decisions. And for most of us who are just like go-getters, we all ultimately just want to like grab hold of the problem and like crush it, right? But like that only makes the problem worse. We actually need to learn to let go a little bit and just reflect on why we're doing what we're doing. I call it like the Chinese finger trap syndrome. Like when the problem is so hard on you and all you want to do is pull it out, right? Pull it apart, pull your fingers out of the trap. You're going to rip your fingers apart. But if you just give in a little bit and relax, just take the pressure off and realize some simple truth. The one for me is that like we live in North America. We're good. This is a game. It's called business. It's a lot of fun. It's also stressful, but it's not going to kill us. We might think it will because it might our mortgage might be at stake or but like trust me, you already live better than like 98% of the world's population. Like most people will kill to be in your seat. Embrace that and see it for what it really is. And if you can get to that place, you can actually like relieve that stress, which allows you to think clearly again, which allows you to show up differently, which brings the right people around and the right solutions over time. You don't have to know the solution right away, but to move through this type of stuff, right? Until you get to this place called informed optimism. Where you now know the issue, you know more about it. Next time you go through it, it'll probably be a little less traumatic. And what I've noticed with myself and all the entrepreneurs I've worked with at Breakthrough Academy, at College Pro Painters when I was younger, is, man, we are not a product of what happens to us externally. We are very much a product of the decisions we make as those things are happening to us. And that's a kind of a relieving feeling. Like, anything can happen to me, good or bad, and it's how I react and decide to move through it that ultimately ends up becoming who I am. Think about that for a second. When you've gone through some of the hardest stuff in your life and you chose to take the hard path often, but the right path through it, is that not the better part of who you are today? And when you've been through the hard stuff in the past and you chose to give up on something and walk away and be like, doesn't work for me, and like it all blew up in your face, is that not the most shameful part of who you are today? We are not a product of the things that happen to us. We are very much a product of the decisions we make as we go through. Anyway, that was my extra tip. Because you're going to go through this as you go through these growth phases. So what do we do with all this? Well, pick one thing. Like I said at the beginning of my talk, there was going to be lots of nuggets and ideas and things that relate to certain people at different stages. But what's your one thing? And the best thing you could do for me is to write it down, put it somewhere, so that when you get this download package I'm going to give you, you remember it, and you actually use a little bit of the stuff we talked about. So what is that one thing? What do you guys think? Does anyone want to share with me? What is one thing that you took from this talk that you could actually like use between now and, say, January? What do you think? You have to speak up. Deliverables and the employment agreement. That's a massive piece. Actually, it's funny. When I bring members in all the time, that's like the one thing where they're like, can we just get a quick win? I'm like, deliverables, employment agreement, one more thing is GSNRs and setting up accountability with your team. It's huge. What else? What do you guys think? Yeah, like what is each person going to do within the org chart and giving key roles to the people, who's in charge of who and who does what, so everyone can work within, like I call it the Henry Ford production line, seamlessly. Cool. So there's lots to do. There's lots that we do. We have like 3 to 4 years of development work with each person we work with. But over time, this stuff becomes very real. And ultimately what happens is you start to create a machine, right? Something, an asset of value. Right, your business is no different than like a real estate asset at some level. Like it's, you can renovate it, you can scale it, you can sell it, you can do all kinds of things to it. But if you're not creating a real asset, then you're just creating a job for yourself. And the hope behind a lot of this is you take all these things that I've put up there for you, and you're basically able to turn one crank and have this cog start to turn, and have that turn 3 other cogs, sales, production, administration. Have that then turn 3 other cogs and goes down the line. And your job as an entrepreneur should be to do that. What I find most of us in, and I was in this too, and I'm still somewhere in the growth phase we're going through, we're all getting involved sometimes in things we shouldn't. And we've got this machine built, but it's kind of built out of duct tape and baling twine over here because we haven't touched that in a while, and we're every Tuesday kicking the TV to make sure it still turns on, and there's little bits to improve upon. But I'm telling you, like I've seen this, hundreds of members we work with, it takes a few years, it takes some patience, but it's very doable. And it's not been done by just 1 or 2 people. Like hundreds and hundreds of people just in our organization have done it. And what's interesting, I find, with all of you guys, you're all here trying to figure this out for yourselves and then going back to your office and alone on your computer trying to build all this stuff out. So what we've done is we've built it all out for you. I've literally created the entire SOP manual for every single role in your organization. I've created the hiring path. I've created the interview questions. I've created the financial models. I've created, for roofing, landscaping, painting, and renovations, we have created the model. We then assign you a coach, which helps you implement it all properly. And you've got a cool community of other members that are there to share ideas and collaborate and innovate, and we don't do it alone anymore. Right now, we have about $2 billion in management, under management of all the revenue that all of our members are doing in a given year. We're watching, this is the averages, but about 25% increase in revenue, which I think ultimately has been the market the last while. It's been a pretty crazy market. But what's really interesting is we've seen about 69% profit increase in the first 12 months. It's all these little 1%s, all these little concepts and ideas slowly making a difference. And when you start to understand where money is being made and lost and you have a system you can plug in to fix it, it doesn't take as long as you think. And the overall idea with this, if this was a stock portfolio, like everyone would invest in it. I'm not investing in any of these companies, I just coach them. But it's cool to watch. And I'm kind of like, why do we need to all be building things on our own and hacking at this like mystery? It's like, can't we just build things once well for all to benefit? Wouldn't that be nice? You know who started doing this really well? the CRM and project management softwares. They started this 10 years ago. I was in these conferences meeting a lot of them. I knew JobNimbus when it was just like fresh. But why can't we do this on all the other parts of the organization? And that's what we did. Created a franchise, but we don't sell the franchise. We just coach it into the business. And that's BTA. So, for today, we're going to give you a job costing model, an org structure model, employment agreement, strategic planning document, and a painted picture process. If you're interested to chat with us, there's a little check box that just says, yes, I'd like to chat. That lets us know. That's cool. If you don't, that's all good too. No worries. Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, like, just know that like what you're going through isn't you, like, you're not alone. And you're not crazy. And it is kind of fun and exciting, and you should be an entrepreneur. The world needs more of them, right? Our world is getting a little bit soft, I think, anyway. And we need to like push and innovate and drive. And there's very few people doing it. So thank you for doing it. I get it. I know the work. I'm in it myself. But keep it up. And necessarily, maybe you don't have to do this alone. And that's all I got for you. That's it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.